Hello everyone, I'm Annie Gibbons and you're listening to Memoirs of Successful Women, the podcast where you get to hear candid conversations with fascinating women from around the globe who share aspects of their business and life journey, how they measure their success and what they have learned along the way. Hello, everybody. I am delighted today to introduce Victoria, Vicky Lowell, who is a leading financial advocate and coach, international best-selling author, and the founder of Empowered Worth, which is a financial education platform that empowers women to become active participants in their own financial future and well-being. In late 2018, after years of frustration working in major Wall Street firms, she left to follow her passion to start helping women assert themselves fiscally. She created Empowered Worth as a resource for financial coaching and education for women looking to meet their immediate economic needs and long-term financial goals. She's also the author of best-selling book, Empower Your Worth, A Woman's Guide to Increasing Self-Worth and Net Worth. So welcome to the program, Vicky.
Thank you so much, Anne. Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be on and to be able to speak to your audience in Australia. It's such a pleasure for me. I love Sydney. So this to me is a huge honor.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes, Sydney is beautiful and we always love it when we're not generally in COVID to have beautiful international guests like yourself come and enjoy our city. So today we're going to start talking finance, and it's fiscal management of our own affairs as women, and also not only for our immediate needs, but also our future needs. So tell me a little bit about that time when you were working on Wall Street and you're obviously very financially astute and you're knowing about your own needs. And then what happened when you suddenly realized, hey, you know what? Other women need to become more assured in how they look after their money. What made you suddenly go, I'm going to create Empowered Worth?
Well, you know, I was the Empowered Worth woman. For many years, I chose to stay home with my children. And part of that was a abdication of my financial decision-making. I fell into very deep conventions where my husband managed all the finances, and he was in finance. He still is, actually. And that worked for us. But then when the 2008 financial crisis hit, I found myself asking very deep questions about our finances and realizing that I didn't have the answers to those questions. I had to go to him. And I wanted just to have more control and change the narrative, because what I was seeing was that I was following in the footsteps of my mother and her mother, and no doubt her mother before her, where they weren't really involved in financial planning. So I started working and ended up working in finance with my husband, working as a financial advisor, and realizing that I wasn't really unique. I think at times we think, oh, we're the only ones, but I wasn't the only one. Time and time again, I had clients that were women who, if they were married, didn't want to get involved at all. And it took a lot of convincing to get them engaged. And clients who were going through divorce, who were going through some sort of a life-changing moment and having to face their finances. And here I say time and time again, I wish I had done this sooner. If I hadn't done this, maybe I wouldn't be in this financial situation. Mm-hmm. So I looked and I said, how do we change the narrative? And all these women spoke with one voice to me and said, it's education. It's about empowerment. It's about changing that narrative that women are going to meet Prince Charming and he's going to take care of them for the rest of their lives. And I think we have changed that. Women now are in the workforce and they're doing it, but then they go and they take that wealth that they've created and they hand it over to somebody else. Mm-hmm. And my goal is not to say, don't hand it over. It's do it as a team. Mm-hmm. Do it. Take your responsibility in this part of your life as well, the same way you would share responsibilities in raising children. Yes. In household, it's the same thing. Just extend that to your finances. Mm.
I agree. It's definitely not just you, because I know that for myself, I've been acutely aware of that. And also, you know, pretty much every woman that I've coached over many years, finance definitely comes up in an area that they're not feeling 100% confident with. They're not even feeling 50% confident with. They're all about growing themselves and growing their business and obviously having enough money. But when you've actually got some assets, revenue coming in, how do you actually manage that? And that default, which is one of, you know, the biggest things, you know, in an area that you should be intensely aware of and confident in managing. It's often an area that you entrust to someone else, whether it is a financial advisor even, or whether it's your partner, husband, someone else who's trying to help you. And it is often at those times, as you mentioned, the critical transition times, such as, you know, maybe even when you're selling a company or having a divorce or something, suddenly all of your finances become acutely transparent. And it's often that time of, why don't I know this information? Why didn't I know that? And that's not a surprise that you want to have, right?
It's not. I mean, we know statistically in the United States, 8 out of 10 women who divorce or widow find a financial surprise. And it's not a windfall. It's never a pleasant surprise.
Yes.
Experience. So that's what we want to avoid. And you're so right about this, because this is a narrative that bleeds through to women of all races, all ethnicities. It is the stay-at-home mom. It's also the entrepreneur, and it's also the C-suite executive. All women are doing this. I deal with a lot of entrepreneurs who come to me and they say, I don't have a full grasp of my financials in my business. The creative parts, and they've created these amazing businesses, and they maybe have great product lines, but they can't tell you great financial information about those product lines. They can create, but they haven't embraced everything.
Yeah, and it's often because they're spending that time in their areas of passion and enthusiasm. And that is, one of the main reasons of their success, that they've gone and led with their gifts and their skill set, and they've gone out and said, I'm really great at my product or marketing or sales or negotiation or whatever aspect it is to their role, even being the face of their business. But the finances behind that is an area that, if you're sort of going, oh, okay, well, I've just got to make sure that I have enough money and it's coming in. But that confidence in how it's being managed is a whole new area. Why do you think women particularly haven't or aren't taking that area of their business and life seriously?
I think it's, quite frankly, societal indoctrination. I think that women have for years been told, you're not good at math. Money is dirty. Money is the root of all evil. Money is something that is best left in the hands of your male spouse. Yes. Or your counterpart. And we've just done that in the same way that we've been taught to be good girls. We've been taught to kind of not really embrace money. I think that is really what you're seeing. You're seeing with millennials too. There was a great article in a magazine called Fast Company. And in this article, it was a February 2019 article, they talked about how still today we see differences in how families talk to their sons and their daughters about investing, about money management. It hasn't changed. It's the same narrative. When you see a little boy, a little girl on the playground, and you see them on, and the little boy is being taught to climb and be a risk taker. And if he falls, they tell him to get up. Well, the girl may be sitting there and she's being told, well, sit there and don't get your dress dirty. And don't, it's that same
narrative. Be tentative. Yes.
Exactly.
That is so true. That is so true. And I must admit, it's only a generation, but even when I was raised, my mother had, a budget and a notebook that she used to write down what she'd spend and how she'd spend it, and even be given an allowance and all this sort of stuff. And they were not nice people. It was just that culture, that era of, my father managed the money and mum then had the responsibility of using it in an appropriate way, but obviously governed by, his overall control. And that's not saying anything disrespectful. It was just the era that it was. And then suddenly jumping a generation of, that's right, my husband and I both have businesses, and then having clarity or confidence that you've both got to, one, know what's happening in your own business and each other's businesses, because obviously we're directors and so forth, but being confident, particularly when you also partner up with other people, you know, you've suddenly got business partners and who's often you attract each other because you've got opposite skill sets and it works well for the business. But with that then comes a great degree of risk, because, you know, you suddenly go, okay, well, you're suddenly entrusting that person. If you're the creative side, and I've seen this in coaching many women, whether they're musicians or pastry chefs or, you know, artists in some way, often they'll then go, I partnered up with someone because they're the business side, they're the finance manager. And that's when things can definitely unravel. Is that what you find a lot?
That is exactly what I find. And what I tell people is that's okay. It's okay. I think there's so much strength in acknowledging that maybe that isn't your strength, that maybe you need to have a partner. And but what I want to stress is that you need to have, I call them financial Fridays. Maybe pick one Friday a month where you say, okay, this Friday, I'm going to meet with that side of the business and we're going to talk and I'm going to know what's going on. Mm-hmm. Do you need high level mathematical calculations and be able, no, you're not running a spreadsheet every day, but you need to know. And I think that the COVID-19 crisis has brought that home. You could very well get sick and within a week have a business partner who's on a ventilator. And now you need to answer these questions. How do you do that if you've never involved yourself? That's the key to it. And I always say to somebody, I think there is so much power in saying, that's not my forte. That's not what I do, but I still need to know. So give me the brief. give me what it is I need to know and just understand that so that you can, when talking to an investor, say, you know what, that really is my partner's wheelhouse, but I do know that X product line makes this much and these are our margins and this is, you know, our turnaround time, and be able to answer those questions. You look great when you do it. So
you look great, and it just is great. It is great to have that empowerment that you go, yeah, I'm asking the right questions. And a lot of this is about knowing what questions to ask. You know, I think that fear of, I'm not good at maths, or maybe it's because you actually haven't thought of things in this way, isn't actually true. That's a default and it's a wrong belief, because a lot of financial management, it's not even about the maths, whether you're good or bad at maths. It's actually about reading the game. It's about reading the spreadsheets. It's about knowing what data you're actually looking at. And most of it is actually assessing and monitoring against budget. Right. So in my world anyway, it's kind of like going, okay, well, if I've got a budget, I want to be able to know, well, how do I assess and monitor that? How do I, if I've actually got money, revenue coming in, where is that money going to, and how often do I assess and monitor my opportunities there?
Exactly.
So how do you approach that with women then coming into Empowered Worth? What are their biggest requests when they first come for assistance?
The first thing that they usually come to assistance, and it always starts with retirement planning. It starts with that, and it is, I have a retirement account, or I don't have a retirement account. But let's say they come to me and say, I have a retirement account. I have no idea what's in it. I have no idea what's invested in it. I don't know if it's growing. I don't know if it's in the right stuff. So I say, okay, have you ever opened the statement? No, I've never opened the statement.
Wow.
It is very common. A lot of financial advisors will tell you that you do that one yearly review and your client will come up to you with 12 sealed envelopes with every month of financial statements in there. So you open it. And you know what I tell everybody? You don't need to necessarily look at it every month. That's great if you feel comfortable doing that. But you definitely need to look at the end year and you need to see those graphs. And you need to see, did we grow? Did we not grow? Those are the questions you need to be asking. You need to know every minutia about every mutual fund that you're invested in. No, you don't. And here's something nobody realizes. The financial advisor doesn't know that either. They look on a great website called Morningstar and they go in, they plug in that mutual fund and they look at it before you walk in. That's what we do. Yeah. So I think you know that. But it's always retirement planning. And then we get into other conversations. Then we start talking about trust and estate. What should happen if something should happen to you or something should happen to your partner? do you have, I mean, I do a lot of talking to these women about emergency funds. And I ask them, I go, do you have enough money in case your spouse or your business partner were, something were to happen to them and you could not access your wealth? Do you have enough money in a checking account, liquid, to be able to run everything for 6 months? The answer is usually no.
Yes.
The answer is usually no. So those are the things that I tackle, I would say, within the first 30 days of a coaching client. That's where we're going. We're not doing a deep dive into budgeting. I find that most women are really good at the budgeting. That's their wheelhouse. So they're good about that. It's more of the more high level stuff. It's, do you have that? What does the future look like?
Yeah. And I love that about your approach, because it's very much, you know, like I do in life coaching and my sort of business coaching, that you actually go for the end goal. So for you, you're actually starting with retirement planning. You know, what are you actually working so hard for? What are you expecting when you actually come out? It's your exit plan, right? It's like, okay, well, I want to have confidence when I'm 60, 65 to actually go, well, I've got these revenue streams organized and arranged for me, or I do have an investment portfolio that I understand where it's coming and how it's, you know, is it high risk, low risk, you know, what ratio and that sort of thing, so that I can feel confident. So a lot of it is confidence for the future, but it's also a lot of what you've been talking about too is very much risk mitigation, you know, isn't it? You know, it's actually looking at the risks of, that's right, do you have income insurance? Do you have, you know, what happens if your partner suddenly is on a ventilator or suddenly, you know, busts up with their partner and then suddenly things go belly up or whatever? What is your safety net? When you think of things are guaranteed, that's where COVID has actually changed the world, hasn't it? What you thought was not possible is actually now possible. In a negative way, for as a risk for business, you know, suddenly you're going to have expenses without the guaranteed revenue. You're going to have to be creative. You're going to have to pivot your business. You've got risks with your own staff and things like that. So I think it is an amazing time. So you said women are very good at budgeting. What do they avoid though? Why do they avoid it?
They avoid, it's the long-term planning. I think it's really hard to change the mindset of, let me just kind of be the firefighter. Let me do the budgeting. Let me work on, what do the kids need this month? How much are we spending on groceries? What are we spending on this? What are we spending on that? And to sit down and quite frankly say, well, what does that retirement picture look like?
Yes.
There's so much involved with that. And it's funny when you start talking about that. And I'm thinking right now of a client that I currently have. We've talked about that. And she came to realization that her retirement picture may not be in the state that she is right now. She might be moving. She's not sure now. And she's, I never thought of that, because I never thought to look at that picture. And what does that mean? Who's around you? And one of the things that I love, and I have a great deck of cards that has all these pictures, and I put them out on the table. Now we do it virtually. We put them on the Zoom. And I tell everybody, pick three. Three things that you think is what you want to see at the end. What does that look like for you? And we work from there, because I think there's a huge fear for people to say, what does the end look like? I think it takes a lot of introspection, and it wakes up a lot of things. Are you still with your partner? Are you still with your partner? Are you still in this business? Are you happy? Is this what you're doing? Are you made, like, I love it when somebody says, I'm never going to retire. I came to visit.
Really?
I love what I'm doing. So I'm going to figure out a way to keep on doing this. I had somebody told me once, I'm going to die here in the chair at my office.
Wow.
I love doing this. I may not be doing it in the same capacity, but I will still be coming in once a day, or maybe it's once a week. Who knows? But they still wanted to be involved with their business. So they weren't doing exit planning in the way that other business owners might do. That's the hardest thing. It's having them take a long-term look at things.
My husband says those very same things. He goes, I love my job so much. I'm going to be one of those old people who just keeps popping in and doing it, whatever. And it's all so lovely. And what it actually shows is that you're so 100% passionate about what you do and what you give back. And that it actually is, you know, such a joy. It's like, I can't believe I get paid for this kind of job, which is gorgeous, but it's also not realistic. You know, that's right. You know, as you age, one, you know, you might suddenly get to, that's right, 70 or 80 and realize, yeah, it's not that much fun, even though you did love it. Or you might have health conditions, or, you know, actually the business needs to move on, or you do need to, you know, if you've passed it on even to family members, you've got to let them run it their way and things like that. So it is a bit dreamy. Do you think we're a bit dreamy at times?
Yes, I think we are a bit dreamy at times, but it's okay to dream. I think it's okay to dream. What I always tell everybody is build a plan that allows you to be flexible. Mm. Build a plan that allows you to grow and change, and that allows you to maybe have. And think if you were retired and COVID happened, maybe your whole retirement plan changed because your retirement plan was based on traveling and you're not traveling anymore. So you have to allow yourself. A financial plan is not a static thing that does not change. It is a living, breathing plan that must change and pivot and grow as the person who the plan is meant to benefit.
Yeah. Beautiful. Beautiful. What do you think about, you're a financial planner, so what do you, is that the way for people as they're learning that to empower themselves and learning how to have more knowledge and understanding about their own worth and investments? What is the advantage of going out also to a financial planner?
Here's the thing. Would you, if you had a medical ailment, you would go to a doctor. If you had a legal issue, you would go to a lawyer. If you have a financial question, a financial goal that you want to get to, then I really do advise working with a financial coach, a financial planner, someone to help you get there. Mm. Because at the end of the day, and there are a lot of great companies out there that allow you to do it yourself, you're going to run into a roadblock. And usually what happens is that we freeze up and we to deal with it anymore. The fear is palpable because it's your finances, and that's normal. That's your retirement. It's how are you going to live? How am I going to pay the rent? It's very normal to get scared. And there is a little bit of a learning curve. That is why I say find a financial advisor. But here's the thing, find one that you really connect with. Due diligence. I think it's really important. I always say this to people when we talk about doctors, me and my girlfriends, I say, can you talk to your doctor when you go see him? Is it just, you know, what's your temperature? No, you have a rapport. You need to have a rapport with this person. You need to talk about your dreams and what you want in life and how you see it. And if you have a really good financial advisor, you're going to be doing trust and estate stuff. You need to be able to talk about your family and how do you see things. If you are leaving money for family members, you need to be able to do that. There has to be a comfort level there. And that's my main thing. Pick somebody because that's what they do and that's what they do well, but pick somebody who you like. You need to be able to have a glass of wine or a beer with them is what I always say.
I love that approach. Absolutely love that approach. And so that's hard, isn't it? So I love that view of, it's just like a doctor. And I think in many areas, you know, you want to go out to the person that who has expertise in this area, who you have 100% confidence with, that you can develop a relationship with and is flexible enough to accommodate your needs, you know, because we're all different. Not everybody is for the maximum dollar. They're also for the lifestyle. They're also about the ratio that they want to invest and help others. You know, we're all complex for our own reasons. And so it's important to have someone who aligns, I'm assuming, with your own values or is at least flexible enough to be working for their client, not just to have their own style, which is inflexible. So how do people therefore know who to go to? You know, in the world, if you've never had a financial planner, I'm sure there's many women listening to this podcast going, okay, well, where would I start?
Talk about money with your girlfriend. This is how we start. whether it's a networking association, if you are an entrepreneur or a businesswoman and you network, ask who manages your money. Are you happy with your financial advisor? I think if you have a great business mentor, ask them, hey, do you guys have a financial advisor? Are you happy with somebody? That's one of the best things that I, you know, really truly believe in is word of mouth. The really good financial advisors out there, they're making their business through referrals.
Yes.
That's how they make their business. They're not out doing, I mean, and you'll see these advertisements, it's all the time where it's like, oh, come. Well, they don't happen now, but you would get a free lunch and you could listen to this presentation. That's great. Go get the free lunch, get the knowledge. But I would say look for advisors that are building referral business, because if people are happy with them, then that speaks a lot to it. So that would be my first thing to do. I would say reach out to women you know and ask them, who do you use? Are you happy with them? I think for women, I always say, try to find a female financial advisor. We are out there. We're like unicorns, but we are, and find them, because I do know that for women, a lot of times it's very hard and they do feel slightly marginalized when they work with a male financial advisor. Then the one question I would always ask when you start that conversation is say, even if you do know your stuff, say, oh, I don't know about that. Can you explain it to me?
Yeah.
And willing to take the time to teach, that's a good sign.
Yes.
That's a good sign.
I think that's a wonderful sign, because that's it. Sometimes you can have these, it can be an overwhelming meeting and it all sounds really interesting, but if you can't clearly articulate what you'd learned, you know, I always use that as a bit of a barometer. If I then went home and told, you know, whether I'd been to an accountant or a lawyer or the doctor, I should be able to come back and go, right, so this is the summary of what they're going to do, how it's going to work, what they're expecting of me. Have that clarity, because otherwise that's it. You don't actually have that empowerment, do you? You don't actually have that control, because you're therefore going to an element of just trust or handing it over once again to then someone else without that involvement. So I love the done with you model for all that we do. How about you tell us about a client then? What sort of client came to you when they were in a certain situation, and how did you help them?
Wow. You know, I think of just one client that's come to mind. Just not to give a lot away, because obviously it's almost like HIPAA.
Of course.
We are a little bit, you know, I sign non-disclosures with all my clients.
Sure.
But I have a client who is finding herself alone for the very first time right now. She's a mother, older children, college age and younger. And she is coming to me because she knows that she's transitioning in life. She's transitioning. It took her a while to get to this transition. And what she wants to do is figure out, it's like she already knows what she wants to do. She just wants that seal of approval, if that makes sense. Yeah. She just wants to talk. And we have these great conversations when we talk, and she has her homework, and she's really good about doing her homework. So that's the ideal client. It's someone who wants change. I will fire a client. If we go a couple of weeks and you're not willing to do the homework and you're not willing to put in the work, then it's best we part ways, because we're not going to get anywhere. But yeah, she's doing the homework and she's growing. And really, when it came down to it, I remember she just wanted me to reinforce for her, because she didn't have that confidence that she's on the right path, that she's making the right decisions. And yes, I will bring in experts here and there. I will bring authorities, because I'm not a lawyer and I'm not an accountant. So I will bring those people in to the conversation and build a team for her. But she already knew what she wanted to do. And that's the type of client that I really like. They know what they want. They're just a little bit hesitant to say it.
Yeah. Okay. And how do you help those who don't know what they want? They know they've got no control over their finances. They know they're at major risk of being ripped off, that they're, you know, so they're so in the moment that they're not taking the necessary precautions. So they reach out to you and go, okay, Vicky, you're the expert. How can you make sure that I'm being fully secure and comfortable and wanting the quick win, because everyone wants quick wins, don't they? They want that quick assurance. So in one hand, some people go, I know it. I just need you to tell me. You go, oh, good. So you've been, in a way, over a couple of weeks reassured. And then there's other people who go, I want you to give me assurance. But I'm imagining, sitting there going, I can't give you assurance because there's a lot of work to be done.
Yes. Well, the first thing I say is, why do you feel that you need assurance? Because really, trust your gut. If you're coming to me and you think there's something wrong, there usually is. So I will take, you know, all the intake information in, and I will look at everything and I will say, you know, here's the problem. And I can think to clients that I've had who have come in and we've done the intake and we've done the balance sheet, we've done the budget. And I'm like, here's the problem. The problem is that you have a spending problem. You have an overspending problem. This is the problem. The problem is not your investments. It's not this. It's that you really can't save because you're spending too much.
Yeah.
And then we have to do a much deeper dive. Then it gets really, I think it gets really interesting. We start to look at, what is your relationship with money? What are the money scripts that you have ingrained in you? How do you feel about money? Because people will squander a fortune because they have ingrained thoughts about money. So we do a deeper dive there. And that's the client that I usually am working with for a much longer extended period of time. That's the client that's there for maybe a year. Because not only are we working to fix what might be wrong, we are working to give them the confidence to not make those mistakes again.
Tell me a little bit about the psychology of attitudes towards money. Does that come purely from the way people were raised? If you've come from an affluent background, money's always been there, so it comes, it goes. You can easily not have attention to detail. Whereas if you scrape for every dollar you've earned, you're more likely to check every little balance. Is it as simple as that, or what sort of psychology do you notice unravels?
I wish it were as simple as that. In fact, it's actually not. There's a lot of things that go into what we call money scripts. I talk about it in my book. There are four main classes. The ones that I usually get very, very nervous around are the money vigilance and the money avoidance. That's the two sides of the spectrum. We never want to be extreme. We want to be in the middle. But those are the two extreme. And that's the person who avoids their money completely. Avoids making money, avoids, if they have money, they give it away, they spend it. And then we have, you know, the money vigilance, which is they're hoarding the money and they're scared and they're so petrified of not having money that they never truly make money because they're not willing to take risk to make money. So too. Now, where do these things come from? They're actually multi-generational. They're taught to you. And usually they were taught to you by your parents, who learned them from their parents, who learned them from their parents. I see a lot of women who come to me and they say, when we start doing this deep dive and I have them do this questionnaire, some of them like to do it with me, a lot of them like to do it privately. And we get these results. And I always ask this question. I say, what is your first memory of money? And time and time again, it comes down to mom and dad arguing about money. And it was an argument, and money was a thing of power in their household, and it was a way of control in the household. And those are the people who you see who either want to control the money, they're super vigilant about it, because to them, that's almost like holding the scepter in their hand that gives them power. And then there's the other people, the money avoiders, who don't want to even go near there because they see it as something that causes pain and stress, and they don't want money at all in their lives. And that's where we go. And we go even further because there are money worshipers. There are and the money worshipers can come from affluent families and not affluent families. Families who were taught that money made the world go round, that's what they valued because that's what they had. And the people in the family who had power and control were those who had wealth. To money, you know, coming from very, very, you know, means that were not as much as somebody who was wealthy. You were poor, and you are a money worshiper because everybody around you who you saw that was important had money. You worship money because you want to be like that. So it gets really intricate, and it's one of the things that I love to look at is, what is the psychology about money? And I love asking that question. What was your first memory of money? And people, I mean, I've had everything. I've had people from, my first memory of money was an uncle who would give her a dollar for a kiss on the cheek. And I started associating men with money and affection with money. Mm-hmm. And she realizes, oh my God, like this explains my relationship with men. She had an epiphany. She had never realized it until that moment.
I think it's so fascinating. What about personality? For example, gamblers, and they go, yeah, but it's in my gene.
I mean, with gambling and obviously gambling addiction, that would be the addictive property. And what are they looking for in something like that? The endorphin high of the win. And what does the endorphin release in the brain do in the same way as if you were to do a drug that would give endorphin release? That is more psychological and biological. But I do think that personality has a lot to do with it. There are people who I'll tell you, narcissistic personalities a lot of times, who hoard money because they want everything is for themselves. They're fantastic. They're great. They're the Icarus. And therefore, everything should come to them. So yeah, personality, I think, can definitely play a role in that. But when somebody says to me, and you do see people who say, you know, there's a gambling issue. My husband gambles. What I also look at is it addiction or is it learned behavior?
Mm.
And again, I'm not a psychologist, but I do wonder if maybe that person is doing that because they remember ex family member would have a big win and we'd all go shopping and and it was moments of joy in their lives. They don't remember the downfall. They remember the high, that manic type of behavior when the person has.
Mm-hmm. And I think in what we were sharing about before, that can still come into play of our lack of attention to the detail behind our own finances, because if you've got that personality who's after the win, you can get such a high and you go, well, there was a great deal. I want another deal. I want another deal. So it can be the emotional focus that takes a lot of energy and is a distractor, a good distractor if you can keep making those deals. But also, it also then can take you away from making sure what you've already received is being looked after well, you know. So it's all about balance. Like all areas of our life, it's about balance, isn't it? You know, so, you know, as a life coach, I'd be doing the same sort of teaching that it's, you know, you can't sort of have a lopsided situation. It's about finding your balance and where there are areas that are imbalanced, where do you then find the supplement? In this case, do you need a financial planner? Do you need education and training? Do you need to do a course? Do you actually need more confidence building and assertiveness around being able to manage this area and to sort of rewrite the narrative that you have around money or your ability to be able to critique your own finances and so forth. So it's a very fascinating topic.
It is. And let me tell you, and going back to that person who needs to win the business deal, one of the questions that I always liked when I started off financial advising, I always saw this question be asked. I think it's a great question. What's your number? The number in your head, everybody has a number in their head. What is that number that you could say, that was it, I made it, I'm successful, I can walk away now? That's the thing with gamblers never have that number. They don't know when to walk away from the table. So in business, I always say to somebody, what's the number, what is the number in your head that you need to have? And it's funny, Jim Carrey once talked about the fact that he and his dad had a number in his head and it was for him to make $20 million in a movie. And he remembers that because his dad died and around the same time he made that, and he wrote a check out to his dad for $20 million and buried him with it because that was their number. And he said that after he got that and he made that for a movie, he kind of lost his zeal to keep on doing it. He had hit his number. So what's your number? That's a really good question to ask yourself.
Oh, that's an interesting one. I love it. And then also, do we limit ourselves by putting a number? So what is the number for a certain level of achievement? And then is that limited? You know, for Jim Carrey then, was that a ridiculous, you know, at the time that you made that number, was that a ridiculous amount and the sign of the crazy achievement? And then is it that we also are, I was interviewing a chief negotiator yesterday who very much went and said, then we have to constantly, you know, renegotiate. So is there a time frame, you know, for Jim or for someone else, is that enough? And you go, my job is done and that was enough in my lifetime. Or is it that I will get to a certain age and go, when I've reached that goal, what will be my next goal? It's a hard one, isn't it? Because there's never enough. There's never enough. That's the reality. So what is enough for your, you know, your outcomes, your retirement plan, for you to be able to live in a certain lifestyle and give back to your family or have the choices that you want to do? What is enough? And then when will you stop striving, or will you always be striving for more and therefore it's never enough? These are big decisions for people to start unpacking, you know.
So. Oh, completely, completely. And that's why I do like end result oriented coaching, where you are, where we're using pictures to really put the, now we can put numbers to the picture. You know, if somebody shows me the picture is a beautiful beach house, I could say, well, that might be a $10 million house. So that's the number for you. Like, what is the, and what goes with that? But I do think that we need to have the end result. We need to know what, we need to know what the goal line is.
Yeah. Interesting. So much to chat about. So how do people find you, Vicky? How do they reach out if they're looking for a women's financial coach? How do they find you?
Well, I'm on every social media platform out there. Instagram, we are on Facebook and Twitter, and the handle is at Empowered Worth. You can also listen to my podcast. I have a podcast on Apple, Spotify, TuneIn, all those different platforms. But I really, really would suggest everybody visit our website, www.empoweredworth.com. And right there, we have a great free subscription that we offer everybody. And you can get not just our blogs, but additional newsletters that we put out. We're going to start putting additional audio out for everyone that's just private to our free subscribers. And you can get the podcast there as well. So everything's right there on the website. That's the best way.
Fantastic. Well, I invite you all to go to Vicky's website. Yeah, you'll certainly learn a lot. You'll get some free tips straight up. She has a wealth of knowledge, and she's certainly known from her experience that, you know, for her and for the women that she's engaged with professionally through her business, she's really helped them, yeah, get that empowerment, get that control, get that confidence. I think a lot of this is around confidence and assurance that you're managing your finances in a way that really supports your current needs and future needs. And that's really, really important. So thank you so much for sharing on my podcast today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's been so much fun, and I just so much enjoy what you do and your podcast. And this has been an honor for me.
Thank you so much. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Memoirs of Successful Women. You can find me at anniegibbons.com, where you can download my free resources, get connected on social, and check out my online magic transformation program. If you love this show, feel free to subscribe to future episodes. And of course, share it with your friends. I'll see you again soon. And until then, happy podcasting.